Hi there.
Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Tall Delight, Reading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. We would like to invite you to support this program and Toward the Light. And for more information on that, please visit towardthelight.org. This week, I'm pleased to have someone who's a wonderful friend and a brilliant artist and musician. And we're going to be talking today about mediumship and the healing power of art. Welcome to Toward the Light, Mary Angelica Bennett. Welcome, Mary. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, that's good. Well, it's wonderful to have you. And what I would like to do is start by asking you a little bit. I know, like myself, you've been an artist and a musician all of your life. And so tell us a bit about the spiritual path and how this kind of really prompted you on a special path with regards to your art and your music.
Okay, I'd be happy to. It's a little bit of a long story, but it kind of goes back to, of course, all of the spiritual experiences that we do talk about start with something that changes our life, something where we've kind of spanned the other world and had an experience with a divine entity or being or experience. And mine started many, many years ago when I was 17 years old, which was many years ago. And I just had my very first, I guess what you call them, STEs,
which was spiritually transformative experience.
Right, right. And I was, you know, I was very young and very aspiring in the field of arts. But I had an experience, I guess you could say, in my language, it was with God. I had an experience through prayer and made a contact, had a very, very powerful experience that just kind of went from head to toe. It was much, much different than just believing, and it integrated within me an experience that, wow, you know, this is a power. This is something real. This is something that hears me. This is something that can answer my questions and communicate with me. And I guess after that age, after that experience, my whole life took a little bit of a shift. And right about that time, I began to have, I guess you'd call heightened intuition.
Yes.
Where I would just get promptings and thoughts, and they were just a little bit more than the ordinary. And one of them that was just very, very persistent was constantly, you need to take voice lessons. You need to study voice, and which was not a really happy topic for me because I didn't believe I could sing. So I just kept hearing, feeling this silent voice that just kept persistently prodding me into that. Eventually, I did follow that prompting and worked with music and took some vocal lessons. And then the message began to shift to, you could write songs if you would like to. You could write music. And not that I was particularly interested because I was more engaged in the area of painting and, you know, the medium of art. But this just continued to pursue me, I guess you could say, rather than me pursue it for several years. And then there just came a point when I ended up actually sitting down and feeling a wave, I call them musical waves, wrote my first song, and ever since I've been, couldn't seem to close the door, and the music just keeps coming. And I feel that it's a little bit different than saying I am a composer, but it's more, it feels like I am a medium or I am a channel, you know, with the music.
Yes.
So that was kind of my experience of how I got into bringing music down that pretty much makes people feel a little bit touched and lots of tears, and I've had much response in that area with the music. And then little by little, I would say in the last 5 years, I actually had a shift in that area with my art, because I eventually understood how it is to write music, or what you would call channel music. And but I always wished that I could somehow do that with my painting, with the medium of oil paints and drawing and painting, and wasn't quite sure how that could translate. But in the last 5 years, I've had some pretty interesting experiences around transferring that same kind of a connective link with a power higher than myself through the medium of art.
Well, I really want to emphasize what you're saying here, because I think that there are so many creative people who have suddenly been getting these messages, like the ones that you are describing that you've had, even for a number of years. And then they start to create something, whether it be art and or music or writing or what have you. And yet a lot of people do not trust the experience enough, or trust the voice enough, or trust their own intuition enough to follow through. So I kind of want to put a special emphasis on what you're sharing right now, because I think it's very important for our listeners to know that it is something indeed they need to listen to, because it is a very powerful means of communication and touching people, reaching people. And I know that, you know, every time you send me a picture, or you've shown me your artwork when I was visiting you, I was absolutely stunned. It is so, so beautiful and so real. In fact, I was just showing your artwork to somebody today, and he said that it's got such a presence about it. It feels real. It just comes to life when you're looking at it. So it's really something to note here. So go ahead and tell us more about how this evolved with your artwork, with your painting. And I know that you've been painting ever since you were a child, correct?
Right. I was about 13 when I took my first oil painting lessons from a private lessons from a woman, and was quite taken with the medium of oil paint particularly. But not, I haven't made the transition, I don't think, until, let's say, I'll just say 5 years. It's been about 5 years now, where I feel there was a real radical shift. And so you want to hear the story?
Yes, yes, please.
Let's see. I believe it begins several years back, when I had determined that I was going to start painting more seriously, as, you know, a little bit more toward the professional. And yet I felt so compelled with, you know, having my life opening up more and more and more to more dimensions and into the more spiritual aspects and focus. And so I had decided that I would take some community college courses, maybe one class, which was kind of a beginning, after I'd pretty much raised my kids to where they weren't needing a lot of focus and time. And so I had gotten all the way up to the very day that I was supposed to register for this art class, and I just had a kind of a sense of, I couldn't get myself to just do the final thing, call the college or fill out the forms. So I decided, well, this is not going well. I can't seem to make this final decision. And so I kind of went inward and went into kind of a prayerful, meditative state, and I began, I call it my inner dialogue. And I said, should I take an art class? And I got an emphatic yes. And I said, well, should I take this class? No. And I said, well, what class should I take? And a very strange thought came to mind. It said, the School of the Mystical Arts. And I thought, the School of the Mystical Arts, now where is that located? And then I started to get a little bit of a sense that maybe it wasn't quite located on planet Earth, you know. Maybe it was something bigger than myself. So I said, and who is the instructor? And immediately came the impression, spirit. And I said, aha,
wow.
Aha, I think I'm getting it. No, don't take a college course to the community college, but yes, do open up and allow that you could be taught from another realm, and that you would learn some things that would, well, make it into a more of a mystical experience. So that definitely got my attention. I did not sign up for the community college course, but did say yes in a big way to the School of the Mystical Arts. And then it was just a matter of just staying open and following clues. And that's what I'd like to emphasize for anybody that is beginning to get feelings and impressions and thoughts that maybe that there's something bigger than themselves getting involved with their artwork or their music or writing or whatever medium they may have as an expression. I really believe that there are things set up, people, beings, whatever we want to call them, on the other side who are just poised, ready to help us in whatever way, any way that they can to bring more power, more beauty, more spirit, more transformative, I would call it, vibration into this world through our mediumship, through the use of the arts. So this was quite an interesting phase for me. I kind of just started following clues. And my first really big experience that I knew was actually coming through in this area was I was in an art store one day and walked in and saw this just beautiful, ornate, very large mirror hanging up on one of the walls in this art store. And I can only say the mirror began to talk to me. And it was very compelling, and it continued to make me want to come and look at it, and it wanted me to buy the mirror, and I kept saying to myself, I was looking at the frame, thinking, oh, wouldn't that be a beautiful frame for an art piece? And I know I left that store like 3 times in the day. I went in and I went out and I went in, and every time I'd go in, this mirrored or this framed mirror was compelling me to just come over and consider the thought about buying it. And it was a little pricey, and it was a little bit beyond my range, but I just kept feeling like I should do it. And so I finally made a bargain. I said, okay, if I can go over to the other side of the store where they keep the canvases and find a canvas that will fit the mirror, the frame, and it's that size exactly, and it's on sale, then I will buy this mirror. And so sure enough, I walked to the other side of the store, found not only was there a canvas that fit this mirror, I had someone pull it down and measure it for me, but it was sitting out as though someone had slid it out from the regular, you know, where they have them stacked. It was slid out standing in the front, and it had a sticker on it that said, on sale. And I went, oh my goodness, all right, I'll buy it. So I went back, I bought the mirror, put it in the back of my van. And on the way home, I just questioned in my own mind. I thought, well, I'm going to have to take the mirror out, thinking that I would paint something. And I had a sense that it had to do with angels.
So was it just a plain mirror with a special kind of
beautifully ornate
frame?
Yes, just a plain mirror. So as I was thinking to myself, what will I do with the mirror? I'll have to take it out. And it was a very large mirror. A very distinct thought came to me, and it said, consider painting on the mirror. And I thought, that struck me very, very profoundly, and that started a whole process of about, I'd say within the next year, I was guided to many, many things. I found a book by a man who had a near-death experience, who was commissioned to paint 1,000 angels before the year 2000. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Who was it?
Andy Lakey?
Lakey. Yes, I've got his book. He does.
Well,
angels.
I found the book, Art, Angel, and Miracles.
That's the one I've got.
Yes.
That's the one I've got.
Book just literally jumped off a shelf one day and into my hands, pretty much. So it was this very compelling, it was like being on a little treasure hunt. One thing would lead to another, and so when this thought came to paint on the mirror, I did not have a clue of how that would be done. Then I found his book and how he had been commissioned to paint these paintings of angels. And then I received my own little particular commission. It was to paint a certain amount of angels on mirrors before my birthday. And so I took up the challenge, not knowing how to paint on a mirror. So I had to do some research and figure out how to paint on glass. But then I got the impression that I was to do these mirrors, angel mirrors, I call them, and that I was to do them as, and I was to give them away as blessings and not receive any kind of compensation for it. So it was a process of just learning to paint on glass, finding mediums that worked. I wasn't satisfied with anything that I read about it, so I kind of created my own medium, or not my own medium, but my own way of doing the process. I would do a transparent paint, a glass and tile paint on the surface, and then I would use oils on top of that to get the faces and the hands and the figures of the angels. And little by little, I began to create a style and a way of, you would look at the mirror and the light would hit through the transparent paint. The wings would have transparent paint, and I would put glitter and just beautiful things in there to highlight the angels and the wings. And then I would find people. I would be guided to people that I gave these mirrors to. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense to the logical mind. You know, that wouldn't be a way to begin to make an income as a professional artist. But what I realized was, in hindsight, what had happened was this was a period of time where I was being taught and guided to develop a style as if you had been going to a school and learning from an instructor a certain technique. And then when I was done, I had created a series, and I had created a knowledge about how to paint on angels on mirrors. And I had this one last gigantic mirror. I started with small mirrors because I didn't know how to do it. But I had this one last mirror, the big one, that had talked to me in the first place. And I felt very compelled that that would be my, what would you say, the final in my class. And so I ended up painting an angel who held a mirror in her lap, which I would just leave the back of the mirror empty, and I painted a frame around it. And then she sat, and she holds the mirror up, and the name of it was called Beloved. And when you look into this mirror, you look into the mirror that the angel holds that's painted on the mirror, and you see yourself. Who is the Beloved? You see yourself. And so these were the kinds of things that began to happen to me, and that painting actually now hangs in the Unity Church in Grass Valley, California. And it comes right in the foyer or in the room that people meet in, and when, as they're walking in and they're walking out, they get to stop and look at the Beloved of God, which is who they are. And these are the kinds of things that have begun to happen for me since I took this course, you would say, and began to be worked with from the other side. And then another culminating experience in that was a man from that particular church, Unity Church, saw this mirror, approached me and said, "I have a mirror, and I would like you to paint an angel on it." And so it was my first commission. I actually got paid for this one. And he brought me a mirror that was old. It was this kind of circular with a cutoff across the bottom. And it was a mirror that had been on an old vanity piece of furniture owned by his grandmother. And he said that he had carried this mirror with him for 30-some-odd years. And it was the most precious possession that he had because of the relationship he had with his grandmother before she passed. Well, I felt quite a little bit nervous having a mirror that was the most precious. You know, it's very large and it was very fragile. And he told me his story, and I had gotten a very strong impression to keep very meticulous records of every single thing that happened as I was working on this project. Well, little did I know that there was going to be phenomena occur. And one of the first processes that I do on a mirror is that I paint on a primer for glass and tile paints. And then as that dries, it takes on kind of a white, frosty color. And then as I put transparent paints on top of that, then it becomes transparent again. So I had painted the mirror with this the surface with a primer one day, went off because it takes a little bit of time for it to dry, and as it dries, it gets a little bit more whitish and frosted color. Came back in and noticed, to my surprise, that there was an image on the face of this mirror. And it was perfectly centered. It was a circle. And then it had almost like if you had a, well, almost like a fishbowl, but I had a very strong thought that it was a vase. I was looking at a circular vase shape and a cut across the top. And I was so, it was in these, the old sepia tone, you know, the brown sepia tones that you see in the old timey photos.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, here's this image. Very faintly, almost like the image of a radiation or something, you know, that would show up on an old image of a photo, or kind of like how the face is on the cloth, the Shroud of Turin, just this faint image. And I was so fascinated. I thought, I know I didn't paint that. How did that get on the surface of my mirror here? And so I was very compelled to call this man up, and I said, well, we have something interesting going on here. There is an image that has shown up on the face of your mirror. And it was actually said in a way, you could say, well, maybe it was some kind of, you know, maybe there had been a vase that had set on the vanity surface, but it wasn't hitting the bottom of the mirror like it would if it had been some sort of a light, you know, infusion onto the mirror or something, that something had sat there for a long time. It was raised up to the very center of the mirror. So even that, the logical mind was just trying to find answers. And I told the man, I said, there's this image on your mirror that has showed up on the surface here. It's shaped like a circle, but it's actually like a vase. It has a cut across the top and two sides. I said, does this mean anything to you? And he said, oh, yes. That is the vase, one of my grandmother's vases that used to sit on her dining room table when I was a child. It was ruby red, it was made out of glass, and it was shaped like, kind of like a fishbowl circle. And he used to play under that table as a child, and his grandmother would say to him, you know, be careful, you know, don't shake the table, I don't want my vase to break. And so it was a very, very strong image for him, a connective link to his grandmother. And it was just, I began to be quite in awe that she was communicating to him, I called it, through the mirror.
Yes.
So these are the kind of things that have been happening more and more and more as I have dedicated, you know, myself and my artwork to be a medium for spirit, for, you know, things to come from the other side and transformative things to occur. And these are just a few of the experiences that I've had in that area.
I really had a strong feeling that you were going to indicate that an image just appeared, because that does happen, and it's a very powerful thing when it does happen, and when you pay attention to it and create from it, oh, I'm sure it turned out to be absolutely stunning, and what a wonderful confirmation once again about the power of spirit and all of our friends in high places, as it were, who are working through us. And, you know, as an artist, albeit I'm quite dormant and have been for a number of years, I stopped painting a long time ago. And I just talking to you and, you know, having spent time with you, Mary, makes me want to paint again very much so.
Well, and I have seen your work, and your work is quite beautiful.
Well, thank you so much. Something I do want to say about Andy Lakey, because he was at our IAMS, International Association for Near-Death Studies, conference in Chicago. Actually, sorry, I take that back. He was supposed to have been there, but he couldn't make it. But his book and his work was represented there.
Mm-hmm.
And what is very interesting about his book, and if our listeners go to towardthelight.org and look at the books page, you will see an image of the book, Angels, Miracles. What was the other part of
Art,
the title?
Art, Angels, and Miracles.
That's right. Art, Angels, and Miracles. A whole bunch of different angel images using different mediums, what was interesting when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, that looks exactly like the angels that I experienced on the other side. In other words, the way that he paints them and the way that I saw them, they didn't have the beautiful feathery wings the way you and a lot of other artists portray them. Instead, their body seemed to evaporate, as it were, about where the waist would be. So you'd see the arms, the torso, and the head, and then it would just kind of wisp away, almost like looking at a comet with the beautiful head formation and the arms and the torso and that type of thing. And that's how I was able to tell the difference between a discarnate entity or angel and if I was seeing a physical being who was carnate on the physical plane, because I was able to tap into all of the different dimensions simultaneously. So that was interesting, noting the work that Andy Lakey did and does. He's a brilliant artist. But I love your beautiful angels, and in fact, I should let our listeners know that I am going to be putting a page up about you and showing a lot of your artwork, including you sent me one of the angel Gabriel, correct?
Yes.
You sent me a painting that you did of the angel Gabriel, and you did a beautiful Japanese angel, which is very, very lovely. So tell us, Mary, a bit about the artwork that you do that you call soul portraits, I believe. Is that what you're calling
them?
Yes,
that's a new thing, too, that has evolved since I did my angel. I call it my angel phase, which I think was sort of the plunge, the initiation into using art more as a mediumship. But one of the things that has come up, I always loved the portraits. That was when I was 13 years old, and I told you I had taken a private lessons from a woman. It was portrait painting, and I was hooked. I have been hooked on portraiture ever since I was 13 years old. I seemed to have a knack for catching a likeness, which I just really thought that as I got older, I would move into being a professional portrait painter. But as I made the shift and began to bring more and more of spirit into my artwork, I began to realize that there is so much more to us than just this physical form, although that is a great symbol, that is a great and oftentimes a beautiful part of who and what we get to be here in this incarnation. But I began to realize that it goes so much deeper, and how would it be to portray in an art piece something, maybe, I know artists, great masters of the past have included clues and symbols and things into the pieces that would give you ideas and impressions about something much deeper regarding the person that they might be painting. And so I began to develop that idea, and I don't know that it's unique, but for me it was special, and for me it was unique to think of in terms of a soul portrait. And how would I incorporate more of the pieces of who and what you are as I paint you? And so I did that a little bit, and I was so surprised to find out that very similar things began to happen for me, the unexplainable, the serendipitous, the thoughts, impressions, guidance, messages, things began to come through about certain people. One friend in particular that I worked with named Joseph, who is an incredible musician, and I was so guided and so given so much information as I was doing the soul portrait with him, to the point where I kept having an impression that there would be blessings in the painting, and I didn't know how that would be. You know, did masters of the past pray over their work, or how would you infuse an art piece with blessings? And actually what turned out to be was that in the borders, everything was given to me very specifically. It was all about some very powerful and spiritual things in his life. But in the corner, there was four corners how the design went in the border of this painting, where there ended up being small spaces, small squares that I was going to insert a particular picture over the top of it that had some meaning to his work. Well, we were showing the painting at this stage. It was probably about a two-thirds of the way finished, and these corners were just blank spots. And there was a few of his dear friends visiting, or we were there showing the painting to them. One who was actually passing away in his process of going to the other side with a serious bout of cancer. He and his partner, his daughter, and then another friend were there. And they looked at that, and as they were looking and I was feeling the great love that these people all had for each other, I got a strong impression to have them literally write blessings to their friend Joseph into these corners of the painting. And so each one prayerfully and very meditatively wrote beautiful blessings to my friend Joseph. And then I proceeded to put on, later on, I placed some pictures over the top so that I don't even know that he ever read them, but embedded within the work were literal blessings from people that loved him dearly, and the one friend did eventually pass on to the other side. And so very touching, very poignant things have occurred more and more and more as I work with people. And the way I'll do a soul portrait is have an interview, and we'll talk, you know, maybe for over an hour about who and what they are and things that are meaningful. And then I kind of take it from there, and sometimes I tune in and I'll feel people from the other side or messages from the other side. And it's just a beautiful interweaving from our part, our contribution, tying it into the other side and bringing it into symbols that are part of the artwork and yet very, very powerful archetypal symbols or personal symbols for themselves of who and what they are, or more than who and what they are, than just a portrait, just a likeness.
I think this is so beautiful what you've done, and I remember comparing notes with you because I was doing something similar and really wanting to get back into it. I think I called them spirit portraits.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same principle, except that what I have done is actually, and I think I shared this with you when we were visiting in Nashville after an acquaintance crossed over. And I had just gotten a call from our mutual friend. So after I rang off, I was just thinking about the man who crossed over, and I addressed him on the other side, and I said, "Well, what do you look like now?" And all of a sudden, a very beautiful vision came to me, and just glowing and luminous and so lovely. Well, it reminded me of so many things that I saw on the other side, so I said, "I'm going to draw this." And actually, my medium is to use you know, black or navy blue or very dark colored matte board or paper, and then use a white pencil to draw light, because these images are all luminous light. So I drew that and I gave it to his wife, and she was so moved by it. She said that it really reminded her a lot of what her late husband saw when he used to do a lot of scuba diving. And I said, "Well, interestingly, a lot of things that we see on the other side really do remind me of what I see under the sea as well." So I would illustrate the spirit essence rather than the physical, but I think that what you're doing is very, very powerful, and I love sort of this compound idea of illustrating the spirit as well as the person, what they physically look like or looked like, and capturing their essence in the painting. And you've done this beautifully. I've seen, what, I think four or so different paintings that you've done, including you've done some recent ones of your mom, who's still living, and then you also did a beautiful one of your father.
Right. That's been the latest, and that's been a really powerful experience that has kind of helped me define even more clearly what my work, I feel, at least currently will be.
If you don't mind, why don't you tell us a bit about that? Because I find that really, really interesting. And I'm, of course, one is always encouraging my friends to trust in their own experiences as a medium. It's not that difficult to do. And a lot of people will say, I'm not a medium. And I say, oh, yes, you are. You've just been trained out of it. So share with us a little bit about some of the experiences that you've had, Mary, that is giving you more confidence and obviously the clear way to do this beautiful, beautiful artwork.
Well, you mentioned a Japanese angel. I can tell you a little story around that one.
Please.
Again, it was a reflection, using the word like a pun, there was a reflection off of the final mirror that I did that ended up in the Unity Church in Grass Valley, California. A woman who was in that congregation approached me one day and she said, oh, I would love to have an angel mirror. I have a specific thing that I would like to do. My mother, who was full-blooded Japanese, has passed on to the other side, and I would like to do something around the theme of my mother. And as we sat down to talk a little bit about it, she shared that she had some mixed feelings around her mother. And they had not had a really perfectly wonderful relationship. Her mother was coming from the old world, old traditions, the Japanese culture. She was born in America, so of course she was a little girl of America, and there was just a different cultural thing that happened between them, and it kind of translated as their relationship being a little bit difficult, the mother being a little hard on her, and just didn't end quite to her satisfaction, and she didn't feel satisfied. And so we sat down. We were still in the church that day, and we sat down after the service and sat off to on one of the side areas, and we dialogued a little bit about her mother. And I was just probing, as I do, what is the theme, or what is the purpose? What are we doing here? And she began to talk about this difficulty in this relationship, and all of a sudden, one word, a very strong impression of a word that I don't believe in my whole life I ever used it in a personal dialogue. I remember it from my senior year of high school in AP English. It was one of the words on one of the spelling lists, and I had memorized the definition. I knew the word and the definition, but never had I ever used the word in any practical way in all these years since my senior year in high school. And this word, ameliorate, it's not a word, you know, that you use every day. And the word kept coming and coming like three or four times into my mind. And I said, and she was floundering for a way to describe to me what she wanted from this picture. And I said, well, I'm just going to say it. I said, the word that comes to mind is ameliorate, and the definition is to make or grow better. And the minute I said that, we both felt the spirit of her mom as if she were standing right in front of us. She started to cry. I started to cry.
Oh.
And we knew that her mother was there with us. And that was kind of like, bingo, you hit it. There was a desire between the two of them, spanning the two sides of the veil, to do an act or create an art piece or a memorial that would tie their hearts together and make what hadn't been good, to make it grow better. And so I did a small mirror for her. I did a picture of a Japanese angel, and it's very small, but she holds a little cherry blossom, like just the beginnings of a cherry blossom tree, in her hands in a vase, and she's holding it out like an offering to her daughter. And then as I was driving home one day, a little four-line poem came to mind, and I had to even pull the car off the side of the road, and I wrote it down, and I felt so strongly that this was the mother, and this was her desires, and these were the things, using the theme of amelioration, wanting this for her and her daughter. And I wrote it down, and I put that on the back of the mirror. And the woman was so touched. She was so moved. And the piece, though it was small, it's something that's so precious to her, not because I'm a great artist or necessarily, but because in the process that we worked, mother and daughter communed. Mother and daughter did make a connection, and their hearts were healed. And, of course, at that point, things like that, you know, I'm in. I want to do this work because it's so beautiful and it's so touching.
Oh, it's so powerful when you do that, and then allowing these messages to come through from the other side. Again, with the medium of art and music, that's so penetrating, much more so than words. And I'm not surprised that there was a tremendous healing that took place as a result of that. And I will put that on the web page as well so that people will be able to see it. I was looking at it last night, and I just thought it's very, very exquisite. And I love your work. You know, I don't come by compliments very easy because something really does have to move me in a very special way for me to just go, wow. But with your work, I've done that for sure. It's quite stunning. Tell us what came to you after that. You know,
the most current story, which is very dear to my heart because it's my own father, it just occurred in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 months, where my youngest sister was out in Oregon visiting with me. And we were having some wonderful exchanges, and it got a little bit into the realm of personal transformation and growth. And we go very deep, she and I, when we're together. Well, one morning she woke up and she came into my office and she sat down and she looked at me with this interesting look on her face and she said, I had a dream. And she said, Dad came to me. And my father had passed away just a month after 9/11, so it's been quite a few years since he passed. So she had a dream and she said it was so lucid, it was so real. And she just dreamed that she walked out of a building, and there was our father standing right outside the doorway, just standing, kind of leaning against a post of a fence, and just smiling at her like he'd been waiting for her. And she walked out. She said it was so real. It was just like real life. And they went for a walk together. And they didn't talk, but she observed some things that he was doing, and they walked a little bit, and just there were some meaningful, purposeful things, messages for her in that dream. But the main thing was that he was there. He had a reason for being there. And so she and I probed further together over a space of about a week. And we began to feel him very strongly and feel that he had something very specific that he wanted to do for our mother, who is still alive and still on this side of the veil, as I call it. And so we tuned in and realized that we wanted to avail ourselves in any way we could to be of service. If we could help our father, help our mother, you know, that's always good for children to see that your parents, even if they're on two sides, want to make something transformational occur. So we availed ourselves to it. And in the process, she had brought me out a whole series of photos that my mom had sent, because she had recently commissioned me to paint her own soul portrait, which I had done, and now she wanted a matching one of our father. So here I was.
Your mom had commissioned you, is that correct?
She had, yes, yes.
Your mom had,
and then
okay.
And so she was wanting one of our father to match the one that I had finished of her. So she had sent all of these photos, and it was just my dad's whole life. I just got to go through everything and experience him as a child and a youth and a young man and their early wedding and their marriage and just immerse myself visually in his life. And then I was going to create a picture where there was a central portrait, but then it would have some things from parts of his life in it. And so I was into that, and yet feeling that it wasn't just me looking at old photos, it was me working with his soul currently. And so I said, what do you want me to do? And as I worked with this portrait, several things occurred. I call them sidelines, But they were all part of the work, which was one night I just got a strong indication to sit down to my computer and write. And my dad had a message for my mom, which I wrote out. It was just a bullet point message of 7 points that he wanted to emphasize to our mother, some very spiritual and special things. I just said, okay. I got out of the way. I wrote it down. And then I saved it till an appropriate time to give to my mother. And then another day, I was just in the middle of a whole different experience. I was exercising and listening to a tape that had some music on it. And when I heard this music, I felt sort of an overlay of another song on top of this music. And I stopped, walked over to my pen and paper, and I said, I can feel it. I feel that there is a song here. What is this song? Immediately came the words, my heart. And I knew it was from my dad, and I knew it was a song that I was to write. So I stopped all my activities. I went into my music room. I sat down, and the most beautiful song just flowed through me called My Heart. And, of course, it made me very, very touched and tearful because my father, it was very, very potent, this title, My Heart, because my father had died of congenital heart disease and had had many, many open heart surgeries throughout his life. And his whole theme of his life was a broken heart. He literally had a physically broken heart. He had struggles emotionally in his life where he was a little broken emotionally and had struggled in many areas with his heart. And so to me, a love song spanning two sides of the veil from someone who wanted someone on this side to know about their heart was very poignant. Plus, it was my parents, of course, which added a lot of poignancy to it. And I wrote the song and recorded it and put it on a CD. And it ended up that we were able to send it out to my mother, where she was able to hear the song and receive the message on March 30th of this year, which happened to be my father's birthday. And my mom, later on, we talked about it, and she said there were things in that message no one could know but me. She said there's no way you could have known some things that I had been feeling, some questions that I'd had in my heart concerning, you know, my beloved, and wanted to know, did he still love her? Did he still think of her? And this song and the messages just made it so clear to her that his love had never changed, that his heart was healed, it was whole, he stood ready and waiting for her. You know, it was just so beautiful that there was this love that still existed. And then the culmination of all of that was, after I finished the portrait, I ended up going out there last month for a family reunion, and I carried the painting with me. Well, the night that I pulled it out of my personal items, I pulled it out, kind of propped it against my suitcase. I was in my mother's living room. She was sitting on one side of the room. My younger sister was sitting on the other side, and I was in the middle facing the painting. And we looked at it, and my mom said, I love it. I just love it. And we talked a little, and she said, you know what? He's looking right at me. And my sister, who was sitting on the far side of the room, shook her head. She said, no, he's looking at me. And I looked at the painting, and I said, no, he's looking at me. And so, of course, from all of that, we got the title. It's called Watching Over You. That always fascinated me. How could an artist paint a painting where you're being looked at from every angle? And here it was, this painting turned out that my dad is watching everyone from every angle. There's nowhere you can stand that he's not watching you. And his presence, it's different. It's like you can feel him there when you look at the painting. And this is why it's very poignant to me, because I know how my dad feels. I know how he was. Well, I know how, when I look at the painting and I feel his soul, I feel his essence, it gives me great comfort. And so this was probably a month or so ago, and then what culminated from that was a very clear definition that I am now to work in something I'm calling Angel Bridge, and that is that I will be a bridge, and I will get to span two worlds, and serve through the use of paint, music, poetry, whatever. I don't keep a definition or a limit to it, but I just allow myself to be the vessel, to be the channel. And it's sometimes you get a little scared because you think, am I just making this up? But time after time after time, it's been so verified with the tears and the healings and the blessings that come to people as they experience not my artwork, and I'm very clear about that. They are experiencing an essence that flows through in a vibrational way, through the art, through the music, through the words. And this is the call, I think, to many, many artists and mediums right now, is that we get ourselves out of the way. We don't worry that we're not, quote, worthy or good enough or accurate enough. We just dedicate our abilities and our willingness, and there is so much healing that needs to occur right now on the planet, and I just feel so privileged to just be able to use those things that I feel very passionate about, which is my art and my music and my writing skills. I feel very much a passionate call to use them for transformation and healing.
And I think that's also why you do such an exquisite job with all of this, too. And I want to really, you know, affirm from my own experience as well that people do channel to us, people and other beings, whether they're on this side or the other, and or the other side. And you're absolutely right. It's very different from just looking at an image. When that person is coming through, you can feel that essence. It is very strong because I go through it all the time. And I could be looking at a picture or a photograph or a painting. And like you, I used to do a lot of portraits. That was my favorite, doing portraits, what I call skyscapes, paintings of the sky, seascapes, landscapes. I was always into realism. And I could feel the essence. And even, you know, when I can get myself to draw now, my daughter keeps after me, Mom, you've got to draw more. Get out your pens and your paper and draw, draw, draw. And I just shut down 20 years ago when I became a widow. So I think you're actually helping me to break open again and to become more creative. But it's
well,
so
I highly
true.
Encourage you and everyone that has even the remotest talent, and I know that your talent is much greater than a remote talent, but one of the things, as you're saying that it comes to mind was back in my college days when I had gone off with high aspirations and wanting to be a professional artist and wanting to make this a dedicated focus of my life. I was so privileged to listen to a talk given by a very inspirational speaker who said, in essence, they were talking about this idea of great art, masterful art, spiritual art. And they were proposing to us as a student body, especially those who were in those fields of the arts, that you don't have to be the most talented. You just need to be open to spirit. And I felt like jumping up out of my chair and waving my arms because I'd just come to college amongst my peers and realized, you know, I'm no special thing. Look at all these amazing artists and amazing musicians, and I'm just one little pebble flung into an ocean of, you know, multiple pebbles are in this ocean. I was not, quote, special. But this message penetrated my heart so deeply where he said, you don't have to be the most talented. You need to be willing. You need to be open. And that's what I encourage anybody who has the remotest talent. If they want to be that channel, they want to be a channel for healing energies on the planet, transformational energies, willingness and aspiration are the key, not necessarily talent, mastery. Because we get taught,
exactly.
We benefit ourselves. We're part of the mix. That's one thing I see. There is no difference between artist, the art, the spirit, and the receiver. In the transformational work that we do, we are all one. We are a circle. We can't give without benefiting. We can't step back and say, well, I'm just this nothing and it's going to come through me. the channel is blessed by what flows through it. I believe Paramahansa Yogananda said that.
Yes.
And so because of that, we are so benefited. And we grow. We're blessed and we grow. And to me, that's what I'm most passionate about, telling everyone, grow, be available, just let spirit work through you. And
doing art is a very, very intuitive thing. When, you know, whether I'm creating music or art or writing, and you're absolutely right, we just need to allow the muse to channel through us and not
absolutely
trying to make
absolutely
something happen, but allow it to happen. And that's even what I've shared with people about being a medium. It's not something you focus hard on. You just relax into it and allow it to flow through you. And it's amazingly easy. It is so easy.
And in the end, you are blessed.
Big time. Well, that brings us, believe it or not, to another transmission of Tool Delight. This has gone very, very fast, and I knew it would. It's been so wonderful talking with you, Mari. And since you don't really have a website yet, but is that correct?
I have a little bit of an undeveloped website. I can give you that. It's a very dear friend of mine named Monica Villarreal, and she has a website, which is unfinished at this point, but there's a little bit that you can see. It's angellightconnections.com.
Okay, and they can also, I'm going to put all of your information on towardthelight.org under Toward the Light Radio Guest, so look to, forward to that. And
All right. We
will talk to you next week. It's been wonderful having you with us again, Mari. You've been listening
Thank
to
you.
Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Please remember, it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye, and only love prevails. We'll talk to you next week. Blessings and light to everyone. Cheerio for now.